So can we do a brief review of what we covered last week? We covered one verse, 38, third chapter, verse number 38. So what is the verse about, and
talks about the amount of covering, like different stages of covering, like different intensity of covering.
Yes, yeah.
So one is like human form, like the three examples are, one is smoke and fire, other one is
dust on mirror.
Dust on mirror, and third is, yeah, child in a womb.
Embryo covered by the womb.
Embryo.
Okay. So what does that mean, like, you know?
So this is in the increasing order of the covering. The first one, though this womb, you can still see fire. Similarly, yeah, you can see the fire
with
the
light and heat.
Similarly, the analogy is like human life, where our covering is less, we can still experience or know God.
There is a spark of Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
The other one is
dust covered by mirror. Can somebody explain that? Dust covered by the.
It's like birds and animals.
Birds and bees.
Yeah. So they don't have as much consciousness as
human beings.
Yeah.
It's more covered.
More, yeah, and more difficult for them to be Krishna conscious.
So in dust covered by the mirror, so mirrors, we cannot see the mirror shape. We cannot see our own reflection, right? So it's that much covered. But still, some aspects of mirror is there. Then, what is the third example? Third analogy, Amit Prabhu.
Embryo is covered in the by womb. Let me check.
Like trees.
Yes.
They have no Krishna consciousness.
So they can't even. They cannot even express their feelings. So it's so covered up that, you know, trees, they are so covered up, they can't even express their feelings. Like, you know, actually they have feelings, but no, they cannot even express it. That's so much they are covered. So analogies of trees. So they have extreme exhibition of lust in that form.
In the
trees.
Lust now or in the previous life, that's why they got trees, right?
Yeah, in previous life, they have previous life also, and even in this life. This life they cannot execute, but yeah, they cannot, you know, increase it or decrease it or anything. Yeah, okay. So then, what else, some of the other points we discussed last time? So we got the hierarchy, right? Which order, and then the increasing order of that. Yeah. This is so much it should take in the class. We spent one and a half hour on this. What else we discussed? this was enough, right? 10 minutes.
What is Sarin doing? Other Prabhu was there.
What is some of the points related to this purport? So what is the solution? Prabhupada, towards the end, he was giving a solution, right? About human being. So the fire of spiritual life can be kindled. So basically the fire is now covered by smoke, like little amount of lust. So now by careful handling of smoke on the fire, that means the careful handling of lust, the fire of Krishna consciousness can be set ablaze. That means, you know, it can be set to increase and grow. You know, the desire to become Krishna conscious can be increased in the human form. That's why only in human form of life is a chance for the living entity to escape the entanglement of material existence. Because in all other forms, they are pretty much entrapped, and they are supposed, you know, they don't have a choice. In the human form of life, Prabhupada says, one can conquer the enemy lust by cultivation of Krishna consciousness under able guidance. The enemy can be conquered by cultivation of Krishna consciousness. That's what we will see, you know. Practically, how Krishna gives the solution, how to conquer this enemy, which ultimately comes down to the same point, cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So any other things? Amit Prabhu, you want to share something from your notes? Something else also Prabhupada talks about, dust on the mirror. What does it about? What is it about? Dust on the mirror, Prabhupada, you know, we said that it was not in line of the thought. Prabhupada talked about something else. What was it?
Child in a womb. Chetadar.
What is that?
So our consciousness is covered by like lot of dust, like 300 kilometers or something, but even dust is there, or like that's what I heard Mataji Maharaj.
Okay.
So like got very huge, like, huge amount of dust is there. So we cannot see our consciousness. Like,
our soul, basically.
Yeah. So by gradual chanting, it's a cleansing process where you gradually
clean
the
dust
and then you can then come to a stage where you can see yourself.
See yourself and Krishna, yeah. So that is a cleansing. The Prabhupada said the dust on the mirror refers to a cleansing process of the mirror of the mind by so many spiritual methods. And the best process is to chant the holy names of the Lord. Okay. Okay, so we'll go to the next verse. Verse number 39. Thus the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. It's clear, right? So the wise living entity is pure consciousness. So originally the living entity's consciousness is pure, right? But it becomes covered by his eternal enemy. But at the same time he has an eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is, and some of the characteristics Krishna describes are, it is never satisfied and it burns like fire. So the lust is never satisfied and it burns like fire. Can somebody share some experiences of this? Like, you know, have you ever felt like, you know, some desires, you know, are never satisfied? Can we relate
like,
to this?
Like, if you want to go for outing or something, it never ends. Like, you'll be for
vacation
7 days, 10 days. After that, once you will come back again, you're not satisfied. You have a plan for another one.
Correct.
Like endless.
Okay. Some other examples?
Food.
Yeah.
Food,
mother.
So, yeah.
I know for many years, so I don't want to talk about.
Yeah. Anything food, yeah. I have an example of food.
But yeah, so, you know, any food, favorite food, no matter how much we eat, you know, again, after some time, we want to eat.
Never satisfied.
So, in my office, like, there are people who keep stuff outside their offices. And then just they buy stuff and they eat donuts sometimes. And you're walking by, you know, sometimes, like, you know, why don't you, it's for free, so why don't you? Sometimes there is cake and there's some celebration. And, you know, just go and eat it because it's, you know, they don't eat the food.
Mm.
You know, it is not the sadam, it's just, you know, it's not good for you either. So, but you still eat it. So.
Sweet tooth. I have a sweet tooth. I really struggle to contain that. And you know, my mom wants me, my wife wants me, you know, your dad had diabetes, all their uncles had diabetes, be careful. It's like, yeah, I will. Next time. But then when I see the sweet, it's like one piece, then another piece, then another. Oh my God, 5 pieces, 6 pieces. So, food is a problem.
Yeah.
I think desire is not.
Yeah. So lust. So essentially, we are talking about lust. You know how it's. It was not. It was never satisfied. Still, we have that hankering. And it burns like fire. You know, if we see that sweets in front of us, and and some for some reason, you know, we cannot eat it. It burns, right? You know, his hand is going. So we can relate to what Krishna is saying. Okay, we can read the purport. We are verse number 39 book.
It is said in the Manu Smriti that lust cannot be satisfied by any amount of sense enjoyment. Just as fire is never extinguished by a constant supply of fuel.
So Prabhupada is giving an analogy of fire and the fuel. So fire needs fuel. Basically its food is fuel. But the more food you give, it only blazes more and burns more. So that's so, you know, the more we try to satisfy the lust, basically we are giving food to the lust, more it increases actually. It wants more and more. Especially, you know, sex life. It's like that. And eating, everything.
Like drinking is the same.
Yeah, drinking.
Someone drinks alcohol or something, then they are not satisfied with one day or two. It's keep increasing the pace.
Similarly, this, you know, smoking, also all these addictions.
Watching
TV?
TV or something.
Soap opera.
Yeah.
My wife is in the...
TV serials, Indian channels, they are like drugs.
Watch one episode.
That's all.
They
you want to know what's,
and you will watch
what's the plot, you know, what mother in law is going to do to the daughter in law. Whole life.
You have to watch the next one.
Yeah.
It's like a
last minute, they will, this one suspense.
It.
It's like an Indian namkeen or something, right? If you start eating or chips, you go next.
But this one, by God's grace, I have not, because whenever I see it, I feel like my head starts aching. Even one episode, if I see, it's like, oh my God, how do they do this? How can people watch it? So that's why I don't get it.
The same concept, Prabhu, like when who drinks, they feel like it's very tasty, but if you try, it's like very bitter taste. So.
No, I used to drink, right? When I came into consciousness.
Okay, going in circles.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, what happens in the material world?
In the material world, the center of all activities is sex. And thus, this material world is called Mithya.
Maitunya Agara.
Maitunya
Agara.
Or the
shackles of sex life.
Shackles of sex life. In the ordinary prison house, criminals are kept within bars. Similarly, the criminals who are disobedient to the laws of the Lord are shackled by the sex life. Advancement of material civilization on the basis of sense gratification means increasing the duration of the material existence of a living entity. Therefore, this lust is the symbol of ignorance by which the living entity is kept within the material world. While one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there is some feeling of happiness, but actually that so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer.
Okay, so some other points Srila Prabhupada is telling is like, you know, how criminals are kept in the shackles of the prison house, right? Similarly, a living entity which who are disobedient to the laws of Lord, that means, you know, who envy the Lord in the first place, are shackled by sex life. That means they are bound up, essentially, you know, there is no way they can get out of this prison house of sex life unless, you know, they have a higher taste where they indulge in, you know, spiritual sense gratification. That's when they can give up this lower taste. Otherwise, verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that, you know, whole world is revolving around this thing. It's all about this. Everything, it's either, you know, gross form or subtle form. Gross form, we all know. Subtle form is, you know, honor, prestige and distinction. Seeking honor, seeking prestige and distinction. This is subtle sex.
I didn't get what I said.
So gross, we know gross sex, right? Subtle sex means, whereas sex in the subtle form is seeking honor, a prestige and distinction for oneself. Basically, it's lust, right? Mm-hmm. For oneself. No, that I need to be recognized, or, you know, I need to be praised, or I need to be the center. Yes, yes. Prestige, I want prestige. Or, you know, if not for me, you know, my kid has to be going to MIT. So, you know, I can become glorious.
Honors, prestige and
distinction. So this is a subtle form. Mostly, you know, devotees very, very, if they are sincere, within few years they can get out of this gross form. But this one is going to take a long time, the subtle form of this thing. So that's how we can be shackled. Then Srila Prabhupada is saying that actually, you know, the lust is actually a symbol of ignorance by which the living entity is kept within the material world. So if suppose we want to get out of this material world, we need to conquer this lust, because the lust is the one which is keeping us. Because in order to satisfy the lust, we need to be here in this material world. Otherwise, in spiritual world, we cannot do. So if we conquer the lust, then we convert the whole of lust into love, then our material life is finished. And another important point is, while one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there is some feeling of happiness. Right? We all feel some... We cannot say, you know, if we go to somebody and, you know, say preaching and say, you know, there is no happiness in this material life, you know, what is this? There is something. There is some happiness. But it's no... But there is no... What does it mean, there is no happiness then?
It's not everlasting.
Exactly. It's not everlasting. That's why, you know, it's not really happiness. Because we see eternal happiness. It's one-time happiness, and on the opposite side, immediately there is distress just waiting around the corner. And another problem is, why it's ultimate enemy if we seek such happiness? What's another problem?
Because it gives both more of sense enjoyment. It puts you in the cycle of...
So it causes bondage.
Bondage, yeah.
So essentially, you know, the lust, like lust. Once we taste that happiness, we want to taste more and more. So then we just get entangled in this material cycle of birth and death again and again and again. It causes bondage. So that's why Prabhupada is saying, but actually that so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. Because that little taste of that happiness pulls us again.
Yeah.
Like for example, you know, next verse we are going to talk about mind, intelligence, false ego. So mind is the repository of all our experiences from past lives. That is going to carry us to the next life actually. So if we know, you know, what happened in our previous lives, everything is registered in the mind. All the experiences, all the tastes, whatever we liked, whatever we didn't like, all these things are there in the mind. So that's why the moment we see a sense object, mind, you know, when senses gives a signal to the mind, mind says, oh, I tasted it last time, it was so nice. So if I'm going to taste this, it's going to be nice, so let me try. So that's why Prabhupada is saying that so-called feeling of happiness, that once when we tasted that happiness, that is going to again trap us. Because we are going to try it again to taste the same happiness. Okay, right? So we covered all the points. And the other thing is, you know, it's compared to the happiness of a drowning man who is being lifted a little bit. The man is drowning, so he doesn't have a, you know, air to breathe, and he's struggling, suffocating. We just lift him little bit, he just comes up and he gets some breath, and then he feels, ah, so nice, you know, I got life back. And you put him down again, he's struggling. So that is the amount of happiness we feel. Once in a while, most of the time we suffer. Once in a while, we get some little bit taste. And he's like, oh, this is what his life is. Then again, you know, go through this distress. So the 2 points, why it's ultimate enemy. First is, you know, it's not everlasting happiness. Right? So that's why, you know, it's never satisfying to the soul. Because, you know, we always want eternal happiness. And the second point was that it causes bondage. Because it pulls us back again to enjoy the same material happiness, and then it binds us into the cycle of birth and death. Okay. Okay. I will go to the next verse number 40.
Mm-hmm.
Indriyani mano buddhi asya adhisthana mucchate ete vimohayati esha jnanam avartya dehinam Indriyani mano buddhi asya adhisthana mucchate ete vimohayati esha jnanam avartya dehinam. So now Krishna is giving us an indication of where to find this enemy, you know. Whenever he described that lust as an enemy, right, so far. So no, it's eternal enemy. He called it eternal enemy last verse, right? Nitya Vairina, eternal enemy. So when we know there is some enemy, we need to find where this enemy resides. So we can attack and, you know, conquer over the enemy. So in this verse number 40, that's the connection. Krishna is going to discuss, where does this enemy reside? So we can, and why is it so dangerous? Because it's going to do some very significant thing to the living entity. So the translation says, the senses, the mind and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So where does the enemy reside?
Senses, mind and intelligence.
Why? It's in that order. Why? Senses, mind and intelligence. Okay? That's where the lust resides. And what does it do? Why is it so dangerous? Second.
Real knowledge and bewilders.
So that's why lust is a symbol of ignorance. Because it covers real knowledge of the living entity.
So false ego is not lust?
No.
False ego is different.
We'll come to that false ego in the, you know, because of lust, you know, we understand what is lust, right?
The desire and all.
Desire for sense gratification for our own self is lust.
Correct. And false ego is kind of the same thing. Because this is false ego.
I think it's related. Prabhupada is going to, you know, explain all these things very clearly.
How the intelligence is the lust is staying in the intelligence.
Sorry?
Means senses and mind, I can think, means how intelligence, how lust is also sitting in the intelligence.
Yeah, Prabhupada is going to discuss the purport. When it comes, we'll discuss that. So then the lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So it confuses the living entity. So that's where, you know, it comes, false ego comes there. Mm. Okay, so we got where the enemy resides and why is it so dangerous? Because it's going to cover the real knowledge of the living entity. So we can read the purport and we'll discuss the purport.
The enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul, and therefore Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all the activities of the senses, and thus when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification, and as a result the mind and the senses become repositories of lust.
Okay, we can pause there. So we'll understand this mind properly here, what Prabhupada is explaining. So mind is the center, as we discussed, right? Center of all the activities from previous lives, all the desires, everything, and all the tastes, whatever we experienced, it's all stored. It's like, you know, it's like a data storage device. You can think of it like that. Hard drive. You know, our sensory hard drive. Sensory hard drive. But then, it is a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. And senses, obviously, now when they come in touch with sense objects, it becomes influenced by lust. Right? Initially, we discussed in second chapter, right? While contemplating object of senses, we develop attachment, and from attachment, lust develops. So then senses, when they, you know, try to enjoy through senses, they become contaminated with lust. And then mind, obviously, gets affected. It's already there and now mind gets affected. Okay, next now comes intelligence. Amit Prabhu, your question will be answered.
Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next door neighbor of spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with the matter, and thus with the mind and the senses.
We can pause there. Okay, so now Prabhupada is talking about intelligence. So after mind gets contaminated, intelligence gets affected. So in order to satisfy the desires of the senses and mind, through mind, no, intelligence has to get bewildered automatically. If the intelligence is pure, let's say, intelligence says, you know, this is wrong, then mind cannot, then we cannot execute those desires, right? So intelligence has to get corrupted. So intelligence gets corrupted such a way we can get it's possible for us to enjoy sense gratification.
It means once we get the approval from our intelligence, then we are
executing. So what does intelligence? Intelligence is a discriminatory action. It does discrimination basically. This is good, this is bad. This is a decision maker, intelligence. It knows, you know, okay, this is a taste last time, this is a taste now, and you know, and I have all this, you know, rules and regulations to follow, and I'm supposed to obey devotees and, you know, spiritual master, and all these things I have to do. Intelligence knows all these factors and makes a decision, yes, go or no go. Mind is just, you know, raw data. But intelligence is the one who is going to make a decision, go or no go. Then we start executing. Then of course super soul has to sanction, and then we'll do that. So in order for lust to be fulfilled through senses, intelligence has to get corrupted. So that's why Prabhupada is saying after mind gets influenced, it affects intelligence. And the problem is intelligence is very close to the soul. That's why Prabhupada says intelligence is the immediate next door neighbor of the spirit soul. It's very close. So then what it does is, in lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul. This is very, very, you know, crucial. You can underline this line, two lines. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and senses. Got it? So the soul is originally pure, right? So how it's identifying with the body and matter? This is the key. So the lusty intelligence, it influences spirit soul, like, you know, saying that, you know, okay, you are not spirit, you are matter. You are this senses, you are this mind. You get happiness through them. No, you taste this, you will be happy. You know, you hear this, you will be happy. Like that, intelligence conditions the spirit soul, and it makes the spirit soul acquire this false ego. What is false ego?
I am the body.
Yeah. So ego is the sense of I am. Ego is the sense of I am. Real ego is I am the servant. False ego is I am this body. So then lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire this false ego, and thus identifying itself with matter, which is mind and senses. Okay, now false ego is also answered, right, Amit Prabhu? Okay. Oh, you asked Prabhu, right? False ego? Yeah, you asked.
Rakesh.
So lusty IQ is high and non-lusty IQ.
Yeah.
IQ is intelligence, so if you are covered with more lusty, your lusty IQ goes up.
Link.
Okay, we can continue the purport.
I mean, here is there like an analogy of like what's physical versus what more spiritual, or all these like mind, intelligence, are there physical objects?
They are material elements.
Okay.
But they are subtle elements. Then, like, you know, we can see the body, right? See, everybody knows, right? Our body is made of 8 elements, right? 5 gross and 3 subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Earth, water, fire, and ether.
Mm-hmm.
5 gross elements and 3 subtle elements, which are
mind
intelligence, and
false
ego. So material body, our body is made of these 8 elements. We have gross body and subtle body. Gross body is made of earth, water, what we see, hands and legs. Subtle body is mind intelligence and false ego.
That we cannot see.
Mm-hmm. That we cannot see. But essentially, the moment of death, what happens? Living entity gets rid of this gross body, and the subtle body carries the living entity into the next body. So subtle body is always there with us for life.
Mm.
That is the one which carries all our past experiences. That's why mind, past experiences, past reactions and feelings, happiness, everything. That's
okay.
There.
So I mean, so then in that case, since mind intelligence and the false ego is more like the gross, the subtle piece.
Subtle.
So it's not a physical law. part of it, right? There's no physical.
Physical means what do you mean? Physical means like you cannot touch. Yeah,
yeah,
correct.
There's no physicality.
Yeah, that's why it's called subtle, because you cannot see through gross senses.
Okay.
We all know we have mind, but we cannot see, right? I cannot see your mind. You cannot see my mind, even through any.
You know the brain. I mean, that's what we see. That's the body. That's the.
That's
gross
the body. Yes, gross right. body.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Continue.
It's like an example of hard disk and the data of the hard disk. Data is like a
data you cannot see.
Hard disk we can see. This is hard disk.
Yeah, we are now getting into big analogies. Yeah.
Okay, we can continue.
The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses.
And mistakes this as true.
This is true happiness. This false identification of the spirit soul is very nicely explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. A human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, one who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than to meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like as are a cow.
Okay, so continuing the same topic, Prabhupada is saying the spirit soul, now because of identifying with matter, now it tries to gets addicted, Prabhupada is saying, addicted to enjoying this material senses. And it mistakes that as true happiness, because we discussed earlier, right, why it's not true happiness, because it's not everlasting and it binds the living entity. And this false identification is described in this verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, where it says, you know, all these things, you know, one who considers the land of birth to be worshipable, some may object, you know, why it's said like that. Or one who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take bath, or one who identifies with all the three elements, they are compared to, considered as ass or a cow. Anybody has any objections?
Why cow?
Why cow? So, it said that cow is also very much in a bodily platform. So, if for a cow, if you show a dead calf also, it becomes so overwhelmed with affection that it gives milk, it pours down milk. So, its cow is very much is a symbol of one in bodily platform. So, that's why, you know, here this person is in bodily platform. So, that's why, you know, it's considered like an ass or a cow. Even though in general, cow is most worshipable, respectable, right? So, this is the answer to that.
So does it paragraph also mean that patriotism is not the right way to go?
Yeah, not in what to say, just sticking to that, you know, just sticking to that, you know, without understanding the big picture, or you know, without understanding, just saying, you know, me, my country, it's all still
all,
again
all
selfishness. Yeah, it's all selfishness, it's extended selfishness, that's all. Yeah.
What is the
so that we understand
byproducts of the body, is this
relatives?
Yeah.
Relatives? Okay.
No, children.
Okay.
Children, right? Byproducts.
Yeah.
So we got this, right? If we look closely, the second part of the verse where Krishna says, right? Lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. That is answered very clearly in the purport, right? How it happens is because of the intelligence, the living entity acquires the false ego and identifies with matter. That's how his real knowledge. What is his real knowledge?
I am the servant of Krishna.
That gets covered. Because now it starts thinking, I am body. Right? And bewilders him. What is bewildering there? Because now it tries to enjoy the matter, gets addicted, and thinks it's true happiness. That's a bewilderment.
So why only kind of talk about these specific aspects, like byproducts of the body, that I can understand, like family. But the land of the birthplace worshipable and goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath. I mean, those things is something that we think is must do. Like, if you go to Vaishno Devi, like the holy shrine, you have to take a bath, right? And
Kumbh Mela,
you have
but
to take a
bath.
But
that's why they say, no, there is a qualifier there, right? You should not only go there to take a bath, but also to meet men with transcendental.
Taking a bath should be the byproduct, I mean, just a 1% deal. 99% is we are missing, kind of.
Yeah.
When you meet the people who transcend.
It's not a bad to take a bath, but it's 1% concept.
So the as everybody clarified, right? To go to a place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath.
Mm.
Mm.
So that is not, that is what, you know, that means, you know, we are just at that, just do the bare minimum and get off. Yeah, rituals.
Yeah.
Instead of understanding the ultimate purpose and getting to the essence. Right? Essence is to hear transcendental knowledge from the sadhus.
So pulling one Rajesh Prabhu trick, it's like chapter 2, he was talking about Vyavasayatmik Buddhi and Srila Prabhupada's experience. When the screen opened, all the devotees rushed. He was still hearing what his Guru Maharaj was saying.
Yeah, yeah, so that's correct. Yes. A very nice example. Yeah, very good. Yeah. So
what
that
are the three elements of self, sorry.
Mind, intelligence, false ego.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. But all are the subtle pieces. Is that what it is?
These are subtle. Yeah. Who identifies this body made of three elements with the self? Yeah, interesting. Yeah, maybe not. There may be different categorization. I may not know. Yeah. Yeah, so that example which Swami Prabhu was telling is like, there is an incident when Srila Prabhupada was listening to his Guru Maharaj's class, right? And Guru Maharaj was speaking in Bengali, right? Some language where Hindi or some language which Prabhupada said, you know, he couldn't even understand actually. But still, you know, he had that desire to hear from the spiritual master. He was attracted to that principle. And of course, all the other disciples. But suddenly, there is darshan opening in the nearby temple. Then many of the disciples got up in from middle of the class and went to attend the darshan. Then everybody came back. But Prabhupada sat and listened. And his spiritual master marked that, you know, this boy is interested in listening. Good in hearing. That's very good. That's very important thing for spiritual life. Then everybody came back. His spiritual master asked them, "No, where did you go? What did you see?" He said, "Oh, darshan opened. No, we went to see the deity." Then what did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say?
That part I don't remember.
He said, "You know, you didn't see the deity. You went to see the stone. You just saw a stone. So how do we see the deity? When a spiritual master reveals the knowledge, that's how we see." And here spiritual master is revealing the knowledge and you stop that and you go see with your eyes, material eyes, what will we see? Right? That's why he's saying you saw a stone, because you don't have that realization and I'm trying to impart here and you're not willing to listen. So that's how, you know, going to a holy place just for the sake of, you know, taking bath, even now, you know, going to Vrindavan, let's say we go to Vrindavan, but there go to Lohi Bazaar and shop things and come back 3-day trip. And what's the purpose, you know? So that's how it is. Considered like ass or cow.
So Mataji, just one clarification. So when we leave, you said what are the things that accompanies the soul?
Mind, intelligence and false ego. Subtle body.
So the subtle body, okay.
So that you can remember stuff from
yes,
the previous body.
Yes,
So you carry the hard disk with you.
You carry the data. Hard disk is gone. Hard disk is burnt.
Carry the data into a new hard disk.
Hard disk is burnt.
So.
Okay, so but data is transferred to cloud.
So we'll go to the next verse.
Lisa explained the software information.
It's a new word.
Hare Krishna, we'll go to the next verse.
Sauprabh.
पाप्मानं प्रजाहीनं ज्ञानविज्ञाननाशनं तस्मात्त्वं इन्द्रियाणि आदौ नियम्य भरतार्षभा पाप्मानं प्रजाहीनं ज्ञानविज्ञाननाशनं
Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses, and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. So now here Krishna is giving, you know, how to conquer this enemy. It's one of the practical aspects. First practical aspect is, from the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by How? By regulating the senses. So that's our solution. How to conquer the lust? First step is regulating the senses. We'll discuss, you know, what does it mean to regulate the senses and what does it mean. And by as a result of this, slay, no, kill. Kill this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. So that is jnana vijnana nashanam. Jnana, knowledge, and vijnana, the scientific knowledge of the pure soul. The Prabhupada clarifies these two terms again in the purport. Nashanam, it's going to destroy this. So the key is regulating the senses. Okay, we'll read the purport.
The Lord advised Arjuna to regulate the senses from the very beginning so that he could curb the greatest sinful enemy, lust, which destroys the urge for self-realization and specific knowledge of the self. Jnana refers to knowledge of self as distinguished from non-self, or in other words, knowledge that the spirit soul is not the body. Vijnana refers to the specific knowledge of the spirit soul's constitutional position and its relationship to the Supreme Soul.
Okay, we can pause there. So here Prabhupada is defining these two terms. We can understand them. So jnana and vijnana. So jnana refers to general knowledge of that the self is different from matter. That, you know, I'm a spirit soul, these are my characteristics, I'm not matter. We discussed that in second chapter, right?
Yeah.
What are the characteristics of soul and matter? You know, matter... matter has to terminate, whereas soul is eternal, and all these characteristics of soul versus matter. So that is general knowledge, that is called jnana. Whereas vijnana refers to specific knowledge of the spirit soul's constitutional position and its relationship with the Supreme Soul. That means our specific relationship with the Supreme Lord. Because all of us have individual, you know, special relationship with the Lord. Very, very individual, actually. It's said that... you know, not any other person cannot replace any other person. We all have special service to render to Krishna. That's why Krishna is missing all of us.
So these many unique services we have?
Souls, unique souls. Every soul has a purpose and every soul is individual, right? That's what I mean.
Yeah, every soul is individual and every soul...
Do we have that many unique
services?
For each soul has a unique service, you said?
Yes. It's
unique
not
service.
It's not really service. It's a unique relationship with Krishna, and of course in that relationship specific service.
What is a unique relationship with Krishna?
I don't know exactly the details what it means, but it means that, you know, the rasa, that what that type of love which each one of us can give Krishna, nobody else can give that.
Oh.
That there's a special flavor for that rasa. It could be, you know, sometimes we can say, right, maybe we can try, I'm trying to give an analogy here. So let's say we have two kids, right? But still, there is a different relationship with each kid, right? There is a different rasa with each kid.
One cannot fulfill
the other. You cannot say, you know, for me now, like, suddenly Narasimha is gone for, you know, whole day and I'm just staying with Maharati. Still, I'll miss Narasimha for some, it's even though two are my kids, right?
Extrapolate for Supreme.
So like that, you know, because we are made like that uniquely. That's why, you know, another important aspect of this is that we are so special. Every one of us is so special, and Krishna is missing all those services from all that exchange of love from all of us. It's not that, you know, okay, five people went back to Godhead and Krishna is happy. No, he's missing all the other people who are left like that. No, he wants that exchange of love. Yeah.
What does curb from the very beginning mean here?
Yeah, actually Prabhupada is going to talk about later on. It means like, you know, the moment we know of, actually. Or actually, you know, if we have to think, take it properly, it means the moment we come to material world, we should start conquering this lust. Because otherwise, what will happen from the second chapter? That lust is going to only develop. Right? If you just increase it, as we feed it,
okay,
it's going to increase. So from the very beginning, or maybe practically for us, is from the time we are acquainted with the knowledge that, you know, we should conquer it, let's start it. That's what Prabhupada is going to tell in the later part of the purport. It's never late. That's what Prabhupada is going to say. So we understand these two terms, right? Jnana and vijnana. Okay. We'll continue.
It is
one point. Also, we used to say Jnana is knowledge, Vijnana is application of knowledge.
Yes, that's a different definition. No, Jnana is knowledge, and we say, I also said many times, right? Jnana is knowledge and Vijnana is realized knowledge. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Realization. Now we are getting theoretical knowledge. Vijnana is when it sinks in and we really realize that, you know, we never identify ourselves as body. That's the thing.
It's the same as Vijnan, like basically
yes.
Science was called. In Hindi or something, science. Vijnan means science, that's what I learned.
Yeah.
Same thing.
So that's why Prabhupada is saying the specific knowledge of the spirit soul's constitutional position and its relationship with the Supreme Soul. So, you know, it's not just, so it's actually, it's same actually, it's they are related, you know, the two definitions make sense. Because, you know, when we say realization, means, you know, we are acting in that relationship that I am not this body, right? So then I am acting in that relationship with the Supreme Soul,
yeah.
Right? Vijnana means realization, right? So realization means, that means I am already acting in my relationship with my Supreme Soul. So that means I'm, you know, I have this scientific specific knowledge of course, the full knowledge, you know, this exact details of, you know, what is my dress in spiritual world, what is my service in spiritual world, those will come later on, right? But at least I'm acting in that, I'm acting in a realized way. I'm no more acting in a bodily contaminated, not in a bodily platform, but I'm acting in spiritual platform. That means I'm getting realizations and I'm acting on the realization. So both are similar. Okay, so we'll read this, continue.
It is explained thus in Srimad Bhagavatam, the knowledge of the Self and Supreme Self is very confidential and mysterious, but such knowledge and specific realization can be understood if explained with their various aspects by the Lord Himself.
Mm.
Bhagavad Gita gives us the general and specific knowledge of the Self. The living entities are parts and parcels of the Lord, and therefore they are simply meant to serve the Lord. This consciousness is called Krishna consciousness. So, from the very beginning of life, one has to learn this Krishna consciousness, and thereby one may become fully Krishna conscious and act accordingly.
Yeah, we can pause there. Yeah, so here Prabhupada is telling, right? So this knowledge and from the verse in the Bhagavatam, knowledge of Self and Supreme Self are very confidential. So how will we know it? Only when the Lord Himself reveals it. So that's why Prabhupada is now linking. Bhagavad Gita gives that knowledge. And we already discussed, it gave the general knowledge in second chapter of what is matter, what is spirit, and specific knowledge that we are parts and parcels. So we have to act in the relationship with the Lord, and that is called Krishna consciousness. So sometimes we may wonder, right, what is Krishna consciousness? So Prabhupada is defining here. This consciousness of, you know, acting as a servant of the Lord is Krishna consciousness. So again, you know, you ask Prabhu, you ask a point, you know, what is this beginning, right? Then Prabhupada here is saying, very beginning of life, Prabhupada is saying, at least, you know, he is giving some concession because we can't, you know, do anything with the previous lives. From the very beginning of life, one has to learn this Krishna consciousness. That means, you know, especially children who are born into devotee families, they can do it. And thereby one can become fully Krishna conscious and act accordingly. Okay? So we'll continue. This very last paragraph is very, very sweet.
Lust is only the perverted reflection of the love of God, which is natural for every living entity. But if one is educated in Krishna consciousness from the very beginning, that natural love of God cannot deteriorate into lust. When love of God deteriorates into lust, it is very difficult to return to the normal condition. Nonetheless, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God by following the regulative principles of devotional service. So, from any stage of life or from the time of understanding its urgency, one can begin regulating the senses in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord, and turn the lust into love of Godhead, the highest perfectional stage of human life.
Very nice, right? Wonderful paragraph. Again, the whole cycle Prabhupada is telling, you know, we know what is lust, right? It's perverted reflection of love of God. So from the very beginning, as we discussed in earlier verses, by prescribed method of living and acting,
mm-hmm.
we should convert this lust back again to love, right? And then Prabhupada is again saying, you know, it's very difficult actually to convert this. Once we got influenced by the lust, very difficult. But still, devotional service and Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even late beginners like all of us, we can again become lover of God. So this is a quiz for you. So Krishna is giving a solution as regulating the senses. So what does practically it means for us from the last paragraph of purport? What does it mean, regulating the senses?
Just follow the regulative principles.
Regulative principles in Krishna consciousness.
Right.
Essentially, regulating the senses is in the last three lines, if you see.
Using our senses in the
service. Yes.
And
yeah.
Drawing otherwise.
Yeah. So one can begin regulating the senses in Krishna consciousness, right? So that's the way we do it. So we regulate the senses in Krishna consciousness means we do whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we withdraw. As Mataji is telling, you know, we use them only in service of the Lord as a tortoise does. Otherwise, we withdraw. So that's how we practically regulate the senses. By engaging the senses only in Krishna service. So then again, we can turn this lust back to love and attain this highest perfection stage of human life. Okay? Okay. Okay, seems like we can go to the next verse. Text number 42. Indriyani parani ahur indriyebhya param mana manasastu para buddhir yo buddhe parasastu sa indriyani parani ahur indriyebhya param mana manasastu para buddhir yo buddhe paratastu sa. The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses, the intelligence is still higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. This is a very, very wonderful hierarchy Krishna is giving, you know. This is how it should be. We can write, you know, next to the Bhagavad Gita, whoever doesn't mind writing in pencil with Bhagavad Gita, you can write the hierarchy. Actually, more details will come in the purport, but at least from the translation. So you can, bottom, you can write senses, or actually dull matter. Matter, above that you can write. Matter,
mind.
Last, first you can write matter, on top of it you can write senses, on top, mind, right?
Mm.
Actually, you can give a gap between senses and mind because something else is going to come from the purport.
From the previous other one, like in 40, it says mind is the center of all activities of the senses. So does it mean it's hierarchical? It's not, right?
No. That is just description.
Oh.
That's a definition of mind. But this is hierarchy, even the way they are layered.
Okay.
Mind is higher than the senses. And then intelligence is still higher. So above mind, you can write intelligence. And above that, you can write the soul. Right? Okay, these are what we got from the translation. So we'll get some more details from the purport. So this is how it should be. But in general, we see it's topsy-turvy. Right? We see the senses control the soul directly. No, all the way up. Okay.
The system is highly dynamic. It can be controlled by either my intelligence or senses.
Who, the soul?
Means either we can control by our intelligence or we can follow the downward. Matter can also control.
Seems that actually matter is controlling.
Yeah, okay. So we can read the purport.
I'm telling the efficiency of system.
The senses are different outlets for the activities of lust. Lust is reserved within the body, but it is given when through the senses.
Mm.
Therefore, the senses are superior to the body as a whole. These outlets are not in use when there is superior consciousness or Krishna consciousness. In Krishna consciousness, the soul makes direct connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the hierarchy of bodily functions, as described here, ultimately ends in the Supreme Soul.
Okay, we can pause there. So, you can write now Supreme Soul on top of the soul. Right? That's what Prabhupada is giving more here.
So, by Supreme Soul, we mean the Super Soul?
Yeah. Yeah, Krishna, Supreme Soul, Super Soul. Or actually, it's Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Right? So,
Bhagavan.
So we understand, Prabhupada clarified so far, why senses are superior to body, right? Matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because Krishna says working senses are superior to dull matter. So, Prabhupada clarified so far in these three lines of the purport, why it is so. Because, you know, lust is... we discussed this, right? Lust is reserved within the body. So, body is as it is. Body is like dead matter, right? Lust is reserved. But it's given vent through the senses. Therefore, the senses are superior to the body as a whole. So, without senses, body is dead. It's like that, you know. It cannot, what to say, it cannot fulfill any desires. So, senses are the one which are giving it life to fulfill that lust. So, that's why senses are superior to dull matter. That means a dead body, for example, it cannot do anything, right? Like that. And then Prabhupada is connecting again to Krishna consciousness that, you know, when we are in Krishna consciousness, these outlets are not in use. That means they are not in use for lustful propensities, but they can be used for Krishna service.
So the soul goes up instead of down.
Yeah.
Because right now in the hierarchy, the
yeah.
top is super soul and the
yes.
soul and then down.
Yeah. Okay. We can continue then.
Bodily action means the functions of the sense, a function of the senses, and stopping the senses means stopping all bodily actions. But since the mind is active, and even though the body may be silent and at rest, the mind will act as it does during dreaming. But above the mind is the determination of the intelligence. And above the intelligence is the soul proper. If, therefore, the soul is directly engaged with the Supreme, naturally all other subordinates, namely the intelligence, mind and senses, will automatically be engaged.
Okay. So you got it? It's got it, right? So essentially what Prabhupada is telling, he established that supreme soul in hierarchy exists above the soul. So even though if soul somehow, you know, with determination, with association, engages in service of the Supreme Soul, automatically the lower things also get engaged and get purified.
In the Katha Upanishad, there is a similar passage in which it is said that the objects of the sense gratification are superior to the senses and mind is superior to the sense objects. If
okay, so we can pause there. So, we got something in between now.
Mm-hmm.
So, Katha Upanishad says that objects of sense gratification are superior to the senses. And mind is superior to sense objects. So, between mind and senses, I asked you to leave a gap, right? So, above senses comes sense objects. Above that is mind.
Yeah.
What
was the difference?
So, senses...
It's like smell and nose. Smell is a sense. Nose is a sense object.
Yeah.
But nose is a body. Right?
Yeah, nose is like
nose
kind
is
of more
matter,
more dead matter.
Matter.
Yes.
Matter.
Yes.
No,
nose is the sense, right?
No,
yeah.
Smell is the object.
Smell
mind.
Is the object. Yeah.
Sense object is a smell. Matter,
yeah.
Not the nose.
No.
Nose
is a sense.
Right?
I thought that maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, these are sense objects.
Okay.
Like, you know, tasting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right, right. Okay.
Tasting,
correct,
smelling,
correct.
Touching.
Yeah,
these
right.
are objects.
I told the other way around.
That's why, because the sense objects are more, which is the one which triggers it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's why they are more powerful. Or rather, you know, they are higher.
So, sense objects, shouldn't that be same as matter? Matters are also sense objects, right?
Sense objects, senses.
What is the example
object,
of sense
matter
object?
And sense object? What,
okay,
what's
example of senses, there are five working, we have like
yeah.
so many senses,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Five
sense,
working senses,
yeah.
five knowledge acquiring senses,
yeah.
right? Some senses are like nose, eyes, nose,
right.
tongue,
ears,
touch, right? skin. These are five working senses and five knowledge acquiring senses. Working senses are legs, hands,
yeah.
anus, genitals and what else, something
skin.
Else is it?
No.
Yeah, they are frightened. There is one verse which discusses
yeah.
all these things. Okay, and these are senses, right? Sense objects are this, you know.
Eyes, nose, ears.
The entities that actually.
No, these are, I think, smell, these are not sense objects. The one which we.
I'm checking on this.
I was thinking.
No, sense objects are like, you know.
Object will be tangible, right?
Yeah,
so
that's what.
The nose, ear should be there.
No, 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 those, no, that's not what I mean. Sense objects are the ones which we feel through the senses, like, you know, we touch something, right? So that this is a sense object. We taste something, so gulab jamun is a sense object.
Mm-hmm. The one, okay.
So, what is matter then?
Matter?
Body.
Matter, it is. What is matter?
Matter
is.
I mean, the working is dull matter. It starts from the bottom, and then there is working senses, and after that there is sense objects, and that's confusing because there is matter.
Dull matter.
Matter
is
like
sense object.
Like,
so
gulab
jamun.
Matter
is
matter.
A gulab jamun. Matter
so
is equal to gulab jamun.
Because gulab jamun is providing that sense
that,
of taste. So
matter
right.
is gulab jamun.
That is where the soul originates, right?
Yeah.
We discussed that.
Touch.
We discussed that initially, right? Senses
yeah,
are different outlets for the activities of the lust. Lust is reserved within the body, but it is given when through the senses. Therefore, senses are superior to the body as a whole. So, body can be considered as a dull matter, but senses are within that body, senses are superior. Because senses are the ones which is going to execute those lust. Right? So, body is also made of matter, senses are also made of matter, but within those two, senses are superior. Because through them, lust is going to be executed.
So I got Jnanendriya Sankaram and eyes, eye and sight, nose and smell, these are Jnanendriyas. Eye and sight, nose and smell, ear and hearing, tongue and taste, skin and touch, and the Karmendriyas, tools of beauty are legs, arms, genitals, anus.
Which
and
verse, do you remember Prabhu, any verse we refer to, Bhagavad Gita verse? There is one verse, where 13th chapter or something where these are discussed. I think these are called sense objects only, yeah, if I'm not wrong. I think the touch and sight and the smell, these are sense objects. Yeah, sense objects. That's why they come above the senses. Because senses, as it knows, as it is, it doesn't do anything. But when it smells something, then it, you know, triggers, okay, let me do something, right? So that's why sense objects control the senses.
Using the touch, smell.
Touch, smell, everything you can see, you know, sight, right? Seeing, sight, touch, smell, what else? Sound, and what do you call? What else is there? Tongue, right? Taste.
Yeah.
These are sense objects. I didn't, sorry, I didn't know we will go come this far, so I didn't prepare much on this verse as we can see. So.
No,
we can continue, see. Okay. If you have any questions, I'll clarify next week.
I
know I'm not doing good job.
Time for the exam.
Okay.
If therefore the mind is directly engaged in the service of the Lord constantly, then there is no chance that
focus.
The senses will become engaged in other ways.
We can read again, Prabhu. Nobody listens.
If therefore the mind is directly engaged in the service of the Lord constantly, then there is no chance that the senses will become engaged in other ways. This mental attitude has always been explained Param Drishtva Nivartite. If the mind is engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, then there is no chance of being engaged in lower propensities. In the Katha Upanishad, the soul has been described as Mahan, the great. Therefore, the soul is above all, namely the sense objects, the senses, the mind and intelligence. Therefore, directly understanding the constitutional position of the soul is the solution to the whole problem.
Mm. So again, Prabhupada is making the same point. Now soul has to be engaged in service as a super soul, and automatically lower propensities will be curbed because of Param Drishtva Nivartante. What does it mean? Param Drishtva Nivartante.
Higher taste.
By acquiring higher taste in service of the Lord, automatically now soul will be established above all of them, really in real sense. Right? Now soul will say, okay, I want to, you know, serve the Lord. So okay, senses cooperate, let's walk to the temple. Sense objects, you know, just only hear about Krishna, only see Krishna's photo, like, you know, images, right? Now soul will dictate all the lower things. Intelligence, soul will tell intelligence, do this. Right? Soul will tell the mind, okay, no, don't, just hear the holy name. Right? That's what we are doing.
With intelligence, one has to seek out a constitutional position of the soul and then engage the mind always in Krishna consciousness. That solves the whole problem. A neophyte spiritualist is generally advised to keep aloof from the objects of the senses. But aside from that, one has to strengthen the mind by use of intelligence. If by intelligence one engages one's mind in Krishna consciousness, by complete surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically the mind becomes stronger, and even though the senses are very strong, like serpents, they will be no more effective than serpents with broken fangs. But even though the soul is the master of intelligence and mind, and the senses also, still, unless it is strengthened by association with Krishna and Krishna consciousness, there is every chance of falling down due to the agitated mind.
See, here now Prabhupada is telling what happens normally. Normally what happens, in general, why is it that men's senses and mind tend to overcome the soul? That's what Prabhupada is discussing, because the agitated mind becomes so strong that it can actually overrule the soul. Or you know, the mind which is, mind and intelligence which are corrupted, they can actually influence the soul. So that's why the solution Prabhupada is telling is that one should engage one's mind in Krishna consciousness. Then the mind becomes stronger, then we can, you know, control the mind. And then what happens, the senses will appear as if, you know, they are serpents, but the serpents with broken fangs. So they become virtually ineffective. So they can no longer control the soul now.
Mataji, if there is any more doubt, senses are, the sense objects are the desire, hatred, happiness and distress. Senses are the actual body parts. This is 13.6. No, you don't have to, unless you want.
Yeah, I know, but okay.
Also, there is a 262 which also said, indirectly it said, Vishyan are sense objects.
Okay.
262.
Yeah, let me see. I don't know much about this verse, about Katha Upanishad. What it, sometimes, you know, same terms are used to define
different
things. Yeah. So let me, and in this hierarchy, those definitions don't fit properly, right?
No, both 262, 13.6, they seem to say sense objects are Vishyam and senses are body parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
earlier I reversed it.
Yeah. That's correct. But even then, the sense objects like desire and hatred, those didn't seem to.
The hierarchy doesn't.
In the hierarchy doesn't seem well. Seem well. Mostly it's like smell, taste, and all. Let me clarify that.
Yeah.
Let me research. Do some research and find out what exactly it means.
But Mataji, there's one confusion I have here. When we say sense gratification, right? You're not gratifying your nose or ear, you're gratifying your taste or your sense of smell, right? So why would we call it object as the actual sensation and just the sense as the body part?
No, sense gratification is more like gratifying your lust through your senses. I mean, it is not about satisfying your senses through.
Sense gratification is about.
It's about lust.
Indulging in sense gratification means just engaging in senses in satisfying your lust. Yeah.
Yes.
That's what is called. That's why we call spiritual sense gratification means engaging your senses in gratifying your soul in service of the Supreme Lord. It's spiritual sense gratification. So that's
basically a common term, it's not referring to any particular sense.
It's using the senses to, like, if you see any bad, you know, thing, it's gratify yourself. So it's lust, right? So you're using your senses to gratify.
Mataji, sense is a medium.
It's a medium.
It's kind of sensor. And actually the beneficiary is the soul.
Yeah.
Soul is enjoying whatever. Thinking that.
You use the word eye candy for a lot of things, like it's sense gratification. But something you will paint for some color as eye candy.
So what are some of the practical aspects Prabhupada is talking in the last paragraph? He is giving some ways to establish this hierarchy again, right? First, he said in the first paragraph, Prabhupada is saying, understanding the constitutional position of the soul is a solution to the whole problem. Or rather, you know, engaging the soul in the service of the super soul. That's what is one of the practical things in the first paragraph. In the second paragraph, Prabhupada again is saying, with intelligence, one has to seek out the constitutional position of the soul and engage the mind always in Krishna consciousness. Again, the same point, right? And third one is, neophyte spiritual eyes is advised to keep aloof from objects of senses. Okay, that's another aspect. But above that, Prabhupada is saying, one has to strengthen the mind by the use of intelligence. So not just keeping aloof, mind also has to be strengthened. Otherwise, what will happen is, the moment again chance happens, then again we will indulge in sense gratification. And then, so then how do we strengthen the mind? One has to engage one's mind in Krishna consciousness. So that's why again Prabhupada is clarifying, but even though the soul is a master of mind, intelligence and mind and senses also, still unless it is strengthened, again see another aspect, one has to strengthen by association with Krishna and Krishna consciousness, then only there is a chance of avoiding this fall down. Did anybody see this play devotees made about this mind, me and mine? Right?
We actually
You enacted it, right? In DYS, this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there, you know, this aspect we can clearly see how a mind can be one's friend or one can be one's enemy.
Yeah.
So later on also Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that controlled mind is one's friend because it helps in self-realization. Whereas, uncontrolled mind is one's enemy because it's going to take away us away from Krishna consciousness. Okay. I think we can do that, right? Last verse? 3 minutes? Huh? Otherwise, we have to do whole one class for this verse.
What is, we will repeat this, this is very long.
Yeah.
Huh?
We will
what?
Repeat this, right? Okay.
And then we will go.
What will repeat?
What you do?
Why we will repeat?
Okay.
Unless we have questions, I will clarify on the sense objects. Otherwise, we have any more discussions on this, I can come back with that. Okay, 43?
We
are losing a week. It's a kind of exam.
I tried 2-3 times.
retry. Infinite retry.
We ask some questions.
Yeah, that's why, you know, instead of saying let's repeat this 42, you know, give me some tangible
questions.
Okay, this is how we'll lose 3 minutes. Okay. 43.
I have one question.
All you will get that in the question,
right? Practical application for this is, I'm not able to locate where it is, but you said knowing the relationship with Krishna. But that is the highest stage, right? How is it like for us to be practical?
Yeah. Right now we are for servitor, acting as a servant of Krishna. No.
Yeah.
That by acting as servant of Krishna, then eventually we'll come. Yeah. That's why when right now when we pray to in Hare Krishna, Krishna, please engage me in service. Right now we are just asking for tangible service, like, you know, give me, you know, service in cleaning the floor in the temple. That's what we are asking. But actually, in real sense, it means give me the service in the spiritual world where I can re-establish myself in your service. That's what is the prayer actually. But right now we cannot ask that, so we are asking this. Okay. So we can read the verse.
Evam buddhe param buddhva samstavyatmanam atmana jahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupam durasadam. Evam buddhe param buddhva samstavyatmanam atmana jahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupam durasadam.
Thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence. That's why Krishna told about the hierarchy earlier. That's why Krishna is saying, thus knowing oneself. O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness. And thus, by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So essentially the question arises from earlier, right? Intelligence is a discriminatory... No, he's a go-no-go guy, right? Decision maker. So if intelligence is get corrupted, as earlier we discussed, it can influence the soul to acquire the false ego. And already we all have this corrupted intelligence. Then what do we do with that now? It's the one which is making decisions. So how do we get around it? No, we can't rely on our intelligence, right? That's a problem. So that's why Krishna is giving the solution is that now we have to cultivate spiritual intelligence. Mm. That means we should not rely on our intelligence, but get intelligence from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So when we acquire the spiritual intelligence, then we can purify our intelligence also, and then gradually control the mind and senses and lower. Got it, the connection? Because already intelligence is corrupted and it's acquiring with, it's asking the soul to acquire the false ego and identify with body. Then how do we do? The solution is to now cultivate spiritual intelligence, which is in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so this paragraph is just a summary of this chapter. So we can just read through and see what happens.
This third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directive to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Without considering impersonal voidness, the ultimate end. In the material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, the mind and the intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, but by gradual development, developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind. By steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity. This is the sum total of this chapter. In the immature stage of material existence, philosophical speculations and artificial attempts to control the senses by the so-called practice of yogic postures can never help a man towards spiritual life. He must be trained in Krishna consciousness by higher intelligence.
Okay, actually, we can read this. Thus,
in the Bhakti Vedanta purport to the third chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of Karma Yoga or the discharge of one's prescribed duty in Krishna consciousness.
Mm. So here Prabhupada is talking about more points beyond this, the matter of, controlling the, cultivating the intelligence to control the senses. He's talking about more broader points, like especially the last point, right, where he says in the immature stage philosophical speculations and artificial attempts to control the senses by yoga. So basically it's the Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga. Jnana Yoga, we speculate and try to realize absolute truth, or practice restrain the senses through Ashtanga Yoga. They cannot help the spiritual life, but actually one should be trained in Krishna consciousness through higher intelligence. So here Prabhupada is talking about a broader aspect rather than just saying, we have to cultivate spiritual intelligence to control the senses. He's talking in general about we have to cultivate the Krishna consciousness is really the way to go. Even when compared to Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. That's what point he was trying to say. Yeah, again another practical point is we all discussed this, right? One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden. So it's not, our point is not about giving up things, right?
Mm.
One should actually be situated where we are and cultivate Krishna consciousness. So one can be situated in transcendental position. By gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind. Right? We can experience that for ourselves, right? By some amount of Krishna consciousness, we can see that we are not getting affected by certain things already at our level of advancement. It's not that we are pure devotees or we have so much way to go, but still we can feel this, that we are being transcendental already. So we, from the classes we heard, what does its spiritual intelligence means? It's like basically intelligence in from Guru and Sadhu and Shastra. So that's what, when we, initially when we come, we don't know anything, right? As we hear from Bhagavad Gita, everything, then slowly our intelligence is getting purified. So essentially the rules by which our intelligence acts now, making decisions, are being changed. Previously it's all about, you know, what I like, what I don't like, right? Desire and hate from our experience. But now it's more than that. It's like, oh, not about my desire and hate, but what about Krishna's desire and hate? Or, you know, what Krishna likes, what devotees like, right? Our rules are changing. So then our, that's how, you know, intelligence is getting purified.
We start doing things for a higher purpose.
So what are, okay, let's a brief review of the conquering lust. So what are practical things Krishna is saying about conquering lust, and what are some things which Prabhupada is telling us? Krishna gave two practical ways to conquer lust. From the verses, you can just look through the last few verses. One was in
regulate the senses.
That is what Krishna said. And then 43,
deliberate spiritual intelligence.
Cultivate deliberate spiritual intelligence. These are the two solutions for conquering the lust Krishna gives. And what did Prabhupada give? It's the same thing. It's Prabhupada gave the application of this. How do we regulate the senses? Regulating senses in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, or, you know, in Krishna consciousness. And cultivate the spiritual intelligence through Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, you know, association of with Krishna and Krishna's devotees.
Which one did you say first one? What proper is it?
Regulate the senses in Krishna consciousness, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, Bhakti Yoga. See, another important point, 43 verses, Krishna is saying, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence. So, Krishna established the hierarchy, but he is saying, you know, because that's why Prabhupada said in the earlier purport, agitated mind can confuse the soul. So, that's why Krishna is also saying, giving a solution for to solve this agitated mind problem. He could have told, you know, control your senses by doing this, or control your intelligence by doing this. But he is... Krishna is giving a solution to steady that mind. Everybody says, right, you know, mind is a problem. So he's giving the solution, he's attacking the mind there in the hierarchy. Steady that mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence.
So how are we studying our mind? I didn't understand it. Because spiritual intelligence, how do you know that spiritual, we are applying our spiritual intelligence or other intelligence?
That's why you know, we don't trust our intelligence. That's what I'm telling, right? We rely on Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. So, you know, Sadhus are our, you know, wife or, you know, devotees. They are very good, you know, help. They can help us very much. If we have confusion whether I am, you know, my intelligence is corrupted or not, I'm making about to make a decision, that's why we consult devotees. Then they will tell, you know, Prabhu, don't do this, it's not good for you. Study the mind by spiritual intelligence. Okay.
What is the Sanskrit name for mind? Mind. Intelligence is buddhi.
Mana. Mana, right?
Mana is mind.
It's there in the purport. Verse, I don't know. Atmanam. Atmanam.
Mana.
Mana, it's called mana also, and here in this verse 43, Atma. Atma also refers to body, sometimes it refers to soul, it refers to mind. Here it's referring to mind. If you read the word-to-word translation, the second line, Atmanam, the mind. Okay?
Isn't generally Atma and soul?
Generally it's soul, but in Sanskrit it refers to different terms, in different based on the context. So next class you can read through these verses again and come back if you have any questions, or you feel we rushed through or something, we can revisit this. I will cover the sense objects thing. That's the only open thing from my side.
Any open answer questions from the last 10 minutes?
Yeah, I will look through the question paper and see. I may give you, if there are any open-ended questions, I will give you the specific verse to read like that, so it helps you.
But does it mean by open-ended?
Open-ended question means that question was like, you know, in this verse number 43, like this it was given.
Reference to
Bhagavad Gita or... Yeah.
I think the last verse in every chapter is a very powerful one.
Yeah. So next week we'll either have Harivilas Prabhu give overview. Even then, I would like to give a PPT presentation of the whole summary. Not the way we did last time. This time I want to cover, like, take some slides from Amritan Prabhu. That PPT is already there on the website. I don't know whether you have seen. Amritan Prabhu's PPT is there on the website. But I will try to make a PPT of summary. Just like, you know, the points we covered. So we just reviewed through the points going through the verses instead of the flowcharts, and maybe confusing. For your preparation, you may use that. But I find it confusing to discuss that in a class in 1 hour. So
we cannot cover all.
Yeah.
Slides.
Then again,
yeah,
we'll ask the same questions. For 2-3 months, what are questions we asked? We'll ask again. So, okay.
The
so we'll
verses too, like the
ma'am, there
one.
Is one, right? Prabhu sent an email.
Yeah.
Okay, let's read that verse once.
3.27.
Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha hankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. So that's the verse you need to memorize. Of course, verse and translation. Okay, so we'll stop here. Hare Krishna.